You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Phil, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name's Philip Cowley, and in 2001, I started a pharmacy up here in Logan, Utah, Cache Valley Pharmacy. I have four boys. I work way too many hours inside the pharmacy. I've struggled. I've given up a whole ton of stuff. And so in 2021, we were on the downslope. It was on its way out, and I was doing everything right. We'd never done more prescriptions. I had never been more successful from every precursor before, but 2001, I decided it was time to do something different or else I'd have to close the door. So I started on Instagram and TikTok. I now have 1.5 million on TikTok. I have 400,000 on Instagram, 12,000 on YouTube, and it just kind of exploded. And the whole goal was to just keep my store afloat, and then it created its own monster. I was doing 12,000 prescriptions a month, and because of reimbursements, you would lose money on more of them than you'd gain. And so I decided I had to do something that was different. And so I started on Instagram. I had zero social media presence in 2020, zero. And then 2021, I just went on. I'm just me. I just say what I want, and it's okay. I'm from the 90s. So in the 90s, you would fight with your friend, and you're like, Ford's better than Chevy, and then you'd be best friends when you walked away. Something happened between then and now. Now you can't disagree, or like if you have one thing you disagree on, your enemies. But I came from a time where you say what you mean, and it's okay when somebody says something different back to you, and then you talk, and you're better. So all I do is go on and realistically do and say what I would do and say for my customers. It's actually been one of the best things that happened in my life because I'm able to help so many people.
Well, Phil, we hold a couple things in common. I'm a pharmacy owner too. In a couple years ago, I was going to go under and I said, I've got to do something. My change was I got rid of all the brand name prescriptions. I was either that or close the doors. And I've been doing social media a long time. So we have that in common. The other thing we have in common is I've been figuratively kissing the ass of the PBMs and their contracts for all these years. And so when I started this show, it's like, I'm going to say what's on my mind. I'd steer away from some things, but basically in the world of pharmacy business, I'm going to say what's on my mind. Why else wouldn't I after you've been pushed down all those years?
So I have an on-site audit tomorrow from one of the PBMs. So I might not just figuratively, but like literally kiss somebody's ass tomorrow.
Yes,
to keep going.
Exactly.
And then I'm going to look at it on in there. They'll audit me on insulin, and they'll audit me on life-saving drugs. They won't look at one thing that they should look at. There'll be no C2s on there. There will be no oxycodone. They don't care. They'll come in. They'll dig through it. My last audit, because since I've started this, and I'm not trying to be paranoid, but since I started this, I have been audited by the big three on site by two of them. Every single one of them's audited me, and the state's been in.
Really?
So I'm not trying to be paranoid, but if not, it's been a real craptastic year. So anyway, that they're here tomorrow, and I hit a point where there was no way to make money through the PBMs. Like, it's not sustainable.
Phil, I want the listeners to appreciate your numbers. The average pharmacy either doesn't do social media or has 300 followers because of customers. Your biggest number, TikTok, 1.5 million. I mean, that is like way out there.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, and in the Instagram's even harder to grow on, so the 400,000.
Because it's more saturated already?
It's just people grow slower. So on TikTok, if somebody follows you, it doesn't mean you'll see their stuff. So people follow really rapidly on TikTok. On Instagram, it goes to your feed. In order to grow on Instagram, you have to have a higher level of engagement. Engagement is the number. So you can have 300 people and have the engagement to win. It doesn't take this many. But most pharmacies engage really poorly with the way that they do things. And engagement is how you win. Engagement is people saying, I'm going to watch your stuff. And so, yeah, the closest I have, look, there's a guy out there that has 700,000 on TikTok, another pharmacist. And there's a couple of Instagram ones that are 100,000, 150,000. There's a few that are a little bit bigger, but we kind of took off out of nowhere in a year and a half.
A friend of my daughter's, Hannah Malo, she's an influencer. She was at about 1 million followers on Instagram a few years ago. I looked at her on TikTok. She's right about where you are, 1.4. This came from somebody who had 1 million followers on Instagram. goes over to TikTok, has 1.5, and you're at 1.5 from zero.
And the engaged accounts, so right now I average about 3 million accounts engaging me on Instagram. So having followers versus engagement in a different animal, and we've been really lucky that we have that level of engagement. And so it's actually really big. It's super weird when I go places because people will like peek around the corner at you and you know what they're doing. But when I shoot stuff, I'm alone. So it's not like...
You are. You're alone.
Yeah. And so when they see you and they're like, oh, what's it like to be famous? You're like, well, I don't know really what you're talking about because everything I do is when it's quiet, nobody else is in the pharmacy. You don't have a crowd. And so it's weird. We went to Montana last year and we were at a theme park and this guy comes walking across with one of my shirts right in front of my kids and they were so beside themselves. He stops and he's like, are you really? I'm like, I'm a pharmacist. I'm used to hiding behind a bench and being nothing and nobody. So
see, Phil, I'm the opposite. See, I do the podcast. And podcasts, there's really no way to find out how many listeners other podcasts have. Virtually no way. And so I get to pretend around my house like I'm famous. And I might have a couple listeners. So we're opposite. Phil, you do this alone at night. I noticed one artistic change you have been doing is a lot of more jump cuts, right? Versus earlier. And are you actually going up and touching your finger on these, or are you editing some other way?
CapCut's the app.
Oh,
it makes
it
really easy.
Yep.
So I do all my own editing, but I use all CapCut. I do a lot of jump cuts and speed ups.
You're filming just as one, and then you cut all that stuff later.
Right. So this week's Prime Week. So during Prime Week for Amazon Prime, you put a ton of content out. And so yesterday I started cutting at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then I took a break for an hour and went for a run. Went to church for an hour and a half, and then I came back and I cut till 9 o'clock at night.
Wow. Besides your time where you're just thinking about this and so on, if you got paid, you know, I'm saying figuratively, you got paid by the hour, how much time would you be spending on this portion of your life now?
I'm over 40 hours a week now.
40 for this?
Yeah.
Plus your time in the pharmacy.
Okay, so you're a pharmacy owner, so this isn't going to sound like a sob story. This is going to sound like reality. So you wake up in the morning, you come in, and of course, you've got your people lined out the door no matter what time you come in for the first, and then you run through the day. It's hectic. You're trying to deal with the insurances. And then at 6 o'clock, because I've had all day to receive questions from my patients, to think about it, like people will come in and say, hey, this is going on. What would you do?
Yeah.
And then that night I'll shoot and I used to shoot like scripted and have it all ready to go.
Sure.
Now I just go grab crap and I'm like, okay, just be you. And then I'll shoot like a 7 to 15 minute video and probably 2 or 3. And then I'll go home, eat dinner, cut the videos. And then I do have somebody that helps me with the management of answering and finding that. Like I have somebody does that part, but the actual video is all me. And then Allie does all the monetization stuff. And so I'll be up till... oh, I don't know, 9, 10 o'clock. And then I'll get up in the morning and do it again. And then if I have days off, I spend 6, 8 hours working on it. So I bet you between 30 and 40 hours now.
Wow.
But I did hire another pharmacist. So I'm hoping to cut back at the pharmacy, but it hasn't, you know how that goes. You hope.
If you had to, if this wasn't a labor of love, what's the least amount of time you could do?
2 hours. Well, and the other thing is, I have a bigger goal in mind. I think that pharmacies in general are on an island and we all think we have to hide from each other because we're like crabs in a pot. Like if you find something that makes money, you're worried the guy down the street's going to... I'm a big fan of the game theory of economics. And I think that if you were able to get all the pharmacists behind one person, whoever it is, the PBMs don't need to have this power. We do it to ourselves because we pick and pick. If I didn't have that goal to see if this has legs, and that's really the way I keep saying it because I'm old enough to know that there was a time when Whitesnake was super cool and now they're not.
Yeah.
Because things fade in and out so fast. There's a Phil out there. There's a Mike out there that is 28 years old, whose kids are really little, who's never at home, who feels alone. We shouldn't be alone anymore. We should fight. And so if I didn't have the goal to get us all together and push, I could probably do it in 2 hours and put out 2 posts a week and I would do fine. But I put out 7 days a week. I put out, and sometimes I put out more because I'm trying to see if the momentum will keep going. But you could do it in 2 hours.
All right, devil's advocate, Phil. most of your audience is non-pharmacists, consumers.
It's the TikTok mob, yeah.
And then how does that transfer over to the other pharmacists, let's say?
I don't need to necessarily win over the senator. I need the senator's wife and daughter to tell him to do something. So the truth of the matter is that women from the age of 25 to 55 controls almost all the healthcare decision making. And there's so many people already who are very skilled in the pharmacy world who are trying to make legislation change, who are trying to make combination. They're already doing that. For me to jump into that game at this point, that's silly. But I can get 200,000 moms behind me, and that power is a new avenue. It brings attention in a different way. Most people don't understand when we go to legislators and say we're not getting paid enough. They're like, what do you even do? But if they know that, it creates a positive image for pharmacy in general. And now I have a mob behind me that doesn't want to see pharmacy go away because they can see the value of us.
Have you dipped into that at all? Anything as far as what we're talking about here? Or are you just gearing up to maybe drop a few things coming up?
So I like to poke, but not make it an agenda. Because the thing about people are, is if you create a brand and that audience builds behind the brand, so you can influence people from a brand standpoint. But if you become your platform, people quit following you because now your brand is that platform. So you have to have a nice, even kill on what you do. People come to me because they want to come in and say, well, what's the difference between Tylenol and ibuprofen? What can I do for my allergies? But if I say, hey, did you know that the PBMs made almost $5 billion worth of profit last year?
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden I say, wait, who did? And they're like, yeah, the people who you pay for your insurance, and then I have to give them money back in a DIR fee. And they're like, what's a DIR fee? You're educating people so the legislators pay attention. And it's a slow push because the mob doesn't move forward very fast. But if we are already trying the other avenues, and honestly, how hard people work for legislative change and how little it really relates down to the pharmacy level has been disappointing.
Yeah.
They work so hard, and then the PBMs just say, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to do what I want. Like, you'll have changes so they can't come on audits the way they do, and they do it anyway. And then they take it back, and then they throw their lawyers at you. So I want the mob. I want the person who makes the HR decisions for the small companies to be listening to me. And then that HR person has real power, way more power than us having one senator who we've spent a ton of money on who may listen to us. All the HR directors, all the small business owners, they all have more power. So I don't want to come out and say we should be doing this or accepting that. Politically, I would love it if people never knew my political standings whatsoever, because that's not my brand. But for me to say that it is wrong for a company to take federal funds, choose their own company and pay their own selves a higher amount, that's not a political statement. That is just a business fact. So for me to come out and say, this is my political take on abortion, I don't have any desire because I'm not skilled in that. But if you want to ask me about pharmacy and the business of pharmacy, for me to be able to come out and say, okay, Phil, what do you think about this? That's my range. And I'm really happy with the lane I travel in. I don't need to be in your lane or somebody else's lane.
As soon as you pick a platform, you're kind of requiring your listeners to say yes or no.
It shortens your brand. Your brand is now just the people who agree with you or the people who hate you.
Years ago, like in Hollywood, I think part of the reason why stars became so famous and so on, part of it is just because they were attractive to everybody, to all different sides. It kind of didn't say too much. And I'm really surprised how myopic some of these stars are, because maybe they think the whole world is a certain persuasion, but it's like they drop off half of their viewers, it seems. And I guess it's worth it for them.
Well, some of them build their whole brand around a controversy too. And I have no desire on that either. If I had my brand, if people ask, what is my brand? I'd like the whole world to be 1% kinder. Doesn't need to be a lot, just 1% kinder. If you had a PBM auditor and a pharmacist and we were both 1% kinder, everything would be better. If you had somebody who was wearing red with somebody who was wearing blue and they were 1% kinder, I actually believe we need to shove back towards the middle.
Phil, Instagram, TikTok, and post Instagram, TikTok, or during this, what emotions have changed for you? For me, I'll tell you, if I was in your position, I might say, hey, I'm kind of anxious about this pharmacy. It's volatile. It used to be 20 years volatility. Then it was 2 years, and it was 2 weeks. You didn't know where it was going. And I would say, hey, maybe some of my anxiety went down because I'm expanding my business and different revenue streams and things like that. I don't know. Maybe I'd be depressed because too many people noticing my t-shirt when I'm out in public. What emotional differences have you had now versus before, if any?
And so to be honest, because I'm actually really upfront with this, before 2021, you sacrifice as a father and as an individual, as a pharmacy owner, you sacrifice and you actually place all of your self-worth because that's what you do. You can't be much else than what your pharmacy is. You're in there 55 hours. I've been on call for my nursing homes for 21 years. So, you know, you put it all in there and you sacrifice time with your children on the idea that you're creating a solid future for them because that's what we were told with pharmacy. We told it was solid. And so I wouldn't go to their games. We didn't go on a lot of vacations. I was taking phone calls instead of them. And I told myself for years that it would be worth it because I grew up poor. You know, I remember being mad because somebody else got the toy out of the brand name cereal because it wasn't going to happen again for months. I remember duct tape on the shoes. It's okay. I mean, we all grew up. We had our places. And I didn't want that for my kids. And so I have four boys and I gave too much time to the pharmacy on the idea that I was creating something stable for them. And so when I watched my store, I put back into my store 200,000 plus because it was losing money so fast. And I wasn't doing anything different. My value was tied up in something that I couldn't fix. It was really hard. And I think that if you talk to a lot of people who've put in that much time, and they always say men of a certain age, but I actually just think it's people at that age where you've given up so much and you're like, okay, my value is now what? The PBMs take everything from me. I get audited, the states in my store four times as much as they are at the store down the street. You can't compete. And they take that from you and you think, okay, I wasted thousands of hours I could have spent with my children over this. And now what is, who am I? And your kids are growing up and they don't need you as much. And so what this has done more than anything else, because you still struggle with thoughts of self-worth. Everybody struggles with them. Like if you're really honest, there's nothing weak about struggling with thoughts of self-worth. And you try to do it honestly and do it right. And you try to show this morality of doing things and being able to stare people in the eyes. And you watch everybody around you just doing it in ways to make money. And so it was bad for a while. And I actually started the social media probably about the very worst time of my life. Because I realized that either I kept doing the same thing and I wouldn't be around for too many more years. Or I do something different. It wasn't like this. It was this groundbreaking. I'm going to do this and I'm going to show all this stuff. It was, if I do the same thing will happen. And so I thought to myself, let's do something different. I got invited to a shoot by my neighbor because they needed, in his words, he needed somebody to fit my demographic for a workout video. And I said, so an old guy that still can work out. And he said, yeah, that's it. And so I went there and there was some social media people. And they're like, you totally should do this. You're easy with the camera. So I paid them and we started and it was slow. We got to 1,000 in August. So we started in July and by August we were 1,000 and we were seeing a little bit. And then it blew up. And what I think now is that if I can help, there's another guy out there who needs to hear that there's hope. And that if I can spread hope and kindness and tell other pharmacy, not just pharmacy, but anybody that the world's good. And then all of a sudden I was getting these messages from all over the world of people who said, when you talk about your insomnia, it made me feel better when you were honest and about struggling with depression, even though you work in a pharmacy, like there's no pill. It helps me when you said you hate taking your Lexapro, which I hate taking. It resonated and it allowed me to be something I'm not. And my kids, I embarrassed the trout out of them, but I think they're more proud of me now because they understand who I am better than before. I want to make people see that people are way more valuable than the things that they have currently on their plate. And I don't always feel that way, but I get to talk to people who do. And I really hate what pharmacies become. There's no stability. And the only reason why we went this direction was for stability because everything else about this job is hard and horrible most days. Everybody yells at you because they either can't poop or they need to poop or they want to poop. Like it's all day long and it's your fault that the copay went up $5 and nobody has to answer for it. and you give up everything. You give up everything to try to create security for your family, and they pull it away from you. And then you think, what good am I?
The problem with pharmacy is with those damn DIR fees, it'd be one thing if you were like running a shoe store or something like that. Let's say you're running a shoe store and you're working 60 hours a week and now your shoe sales are going down. And maybe you're not needed. Maybe you're only needed 20 hours a week. Well, at least you can feel that. Maybe you have more time to spend with your boys, or you say, ah, screw it. I'm going to take this weekend off instead of busting my ass here. The problem with the DIR stuff is pharmacists felt more and more like they were needed. It's busier, and at the whole time, it's being sucked out from under you. So talk about a wall tumbling down. It's terrible.
I 100% agree with what you're saying. Don't you think the problem is systemically substantially larger than that? So we get rid of DIR fees. Do you foresee 5 years from now the PBMs, the pattern, not just the PBMs, but the whole system? Can you foresee we take a DIR fee out, we mandate something else? The system is so broken.
One step to that, one of my employees said, I'm so excited about all the laws coming through in Michigan in 2024, everything against the DIRs and that. And I said to him, don't hold your breath. I think the value in what's happening in some of these political fronts is that it's getting maybe simpler. So maybe instead of people stealing from the pharmacy and 8 different ways with smoke and mirror, maybe it's down to 3. And if that happens, maybe the legislator that lives in your area or something might understand this over lunch versus weeks, and they're going to roll their eyes back and it's not going to make a dent in their understanding of it. So no, I don't think this is going anywhere, except maybe it's not so obfuscated where people can see a little bit more clearly through it. But they're just going to see how they're getting screwed instead of having the lights off.
I think you and I are on the same page there, because I believe sometimes what will happen is they're giving us the argument to be had. If I was the PBMs, I would fight back and forth on the DIR fee, because who cares? I'm still making so much money on the fact that I get to set up my own contracts with my own people however I want to do it.
Yep.
And there's no accountability. At some point, there will be a brave senator, a brave Congress member who will say, this is it. And we are going to fix this system. And when they do that, they will be able to start pointing at the fact of how many people get so much money from manufacturers and PBMs. And the whole thing will come down crashing the way that the opiate did. At some point, they'll start seeing it. But I think that, I don't know, I don't get super excited about one or two little changes, because it feels like they're throwing me a bone, so I'll quit complaining. Where really, if pharmacists were to come together, your retail, your chain, everybody would come together and say, we're done with this. There's plenty of money in this. I think that real change will have to come before the mess is over. I think that the rest of it sounds good. And I appreciate, and people work so hard. Like, I don't ever want to take away from what people have done for me.
Yep.
They work so hard for me. But a DIR fee, they'll just find another way to take it from me.
Yeah, they'll find another way.
They just Mac charge you. And has anybody ever won a Mac appeal? Nobody's ever won one once. So you appeal all you want, they don't care. And we can't sue them together, because it's in our contract that we can't even sue the PBMs together. So even if we all came together and said this is illegal, we're already contracted. We can't even sue them as one group.
Phil, you're a better man than I am. If I had this kind of notoriety with Insta and TikTok, I would just take it and run. I must be selfish. Maybe I'm too pessimistic. I would just take it and run. And that's probably why you are where you are, because you have a deeper meaning to all this. I guess I'm just superficial. I would just walk around and hope people recognized me. I don't know if I have the depth that you do.
My best day is when I'm all by myself in the desert. We go to southern Utah, I go in the desert, I'll go on a hike, and there's nothing but sunshine and a little bit of wind, and it's quiet, it's peaceful. And I know that everything's going to be okay. When I get a big check, when this pharmacy's done well, I didn't feel better. At that point, there was just more animosity. And when people like see you and they want stuff from you, you don't feel better. It feels like there's more pressure on you. And then you have more check marks and more boxes to check. And you've got to get them all on the intrusive thoughts, rolls and rolls. And then you think, what's next and what's next? And I really look at it as the most peaceful place would be for all of us to be successful, which I know doesn't really work. But why wouldn't we at least try for it? Like, it's funny. We're so sure it won't work that we haven't even tried it. And so I'm with you. I understand that, like, you sit on the back porch and the wind blows and the rain's just barely rolling in and you're sitting there and you're truly happy in that moment.
Yeah.
Because you're right there.
It doesn't take much.
So the screaming crowds and having people come in and take pictures and I mean, I appreciate them. Like, I got to be honest, I have full gratitude for anybody that follows me, especially those that don't completely agree with me. Because the people who follow, who will talk to you, will see you as a person, then you get to see them. But, I mean, my end goal was to create security for my family. And the only way I can do that is by allowing people to be them and me be me and all of us find our own way. If I create a fight, that just creates more intrusive thoughts, more work, more problems. And so I don't know if it's necessarily that I'm got depth. Maybe I've just been beat up in the washing machine of life for so long. At 30, I would have been different. Almost 50, I'm thinking, okay, I have no desire to own 16 stores. I don't want to make $45 million a year. I don't. But I would love to go on local TV and talk to them about the importance of going to your local pharmacy and actually talk, even if it's a chain store, talking to your pharmacist and finding out what they're worth. I would love to do that because maybe I helped younger Phil, wherever he's at, feel seen and heard. The end's going to come for all of us. And when it comes, I don't think the amount of money you have will count nearly as much as the good you put out in the world.
Or people recognize you new with your t-shirt on.
Doesn't matter at all, does it? But if somebody recognized you and they said, I saw when he talked about making sure when you take your antidepressants to talk to people because it's normal to feel this influx. And I talked to my brother and he talked and you're like, okay, wait, I started a conversation that could help somebody. You don't get to do that very often. Most of the good we do in this life is pretty short seen.
I had Alex Barker on the show a couple times. He's with Happy PharmD, and two times he mentioned this, so I know it's important to him, but he talked about pharmacists needing a hero, and he mentioned like a comic book hero, whatever, but it's something that other professions or industries maybe have it, but pharmacy, you don't really know where to look for that leadership. You were kind of alluding to that earlier.
Yeah, I mean, we need it. So we need a voice, and we need a voice now because if we wait too long, look at the French system, look at most of the other systems in the world and the way our pharmacy business is going. We're following other patterns to where we will not be seen, heard, or necessary. That you're dispensing, you can go to other countries, you can go up to a machine and put your prescription in and it pops it out for you without a person there. And I believe that if we don't get a voice, if we don't have somebody who, when there's something going on, you're like, well, you need to call this person and have them speak. But we have to have somebody who's not associated. And that's the trick, like somebody who isn't getting paid by APHA or whoever, because we always fight with ourselves so much. You need somebody who just is going out there to do it and to have a good voice for pharmacy. And if we have it, I would step behind someone like that in a second and push this down the road without a problem. But we need that, or I think that our industry's in huge trouble in the next 7 years.
Can you think of another industry that has someone like that to compare that to?
Well, you look at doctors are the best. Look at how many doctors are on TV, and each one of those doctors has a loud voice. So Dr. Oz, he's fine. I don't know him. I've never seen anything that I disagree with him, really. I understand that he's got some vantage points I don't have. But when Dr. Oz goes on the Today Show and talks about something, people attach themselves to Dr. Oz and they think, okay, I like him. He's saying what I like. I want this to happen for that industry. The only person that's famous as a mass murderer is the only person that's been famous as a pharmacist. The very first killer, and I can't think of his name right now, but everybody else is going to remember it, but H.H. Holmes is like the only famous pharmacist.
I don't know about him.
H.H. Holmes was a pharmacist in Chicago during the World Fair, and he killed like 118 people. He was the first serial killer of the United States. He would burn them in his own crematorium. He poisoned them, stabbed them. He did everything. They'd come in. And so you know him. We can come up with Pemberton. We can come up with a few others that made like Coca-Cola. And then there's the pharmacist from Poland that saved all the Jewish people. And that's about it. It's like you Wikipedia, and we have this huge history, and we don't have anybody who's, there's a few congressmen, there's some, but we've never had somebody who takes on the face of pharmacy because I think we just fight against each other too much.
Let's say there was someone charismatic and they were from a bigger group. Is it a necessary path that they're going to fight? Is that a nature of somebody who's representing an association?
I don't think so. It depends on what you need. So, like, I started what I'm doing because I felt like my life, like what I did my whole life, was taken from me. And the first thing I thought of was the 1,000 other people like me doing the same thing as I was doing on that day. And I was sick to myself that somebody else was going through it alone, what I was going through. And so when somebody asked me why I do it, I have 20 years of suffering in the desert that drives me forward. And so you could have somebody from an association who's charismatic, and you could have, but you need to ask what put you in the position where you were willing to do what you started because your store was going under, right?
Yep.
You saw your life, what you did, being taken from you.
Yes. More of the personal struggle. That's how they ended up in that position then.
Yeah. And I think that struggle is what makes it to where you push things forward in a way that's not easily bought. And you're not looking for very specific things. See, we have a lot of compounders who really love compounding. I've compounded for years, right? But when they talk to people, it's just compounding. Like the idea that you make 32 cents on an amoxicillin doesn't really, that's not their problem. My thing is that little mom who was getting the amoxicillin has no one to talk to anymore because we've changed pharmacy. She needs, the amoxicillin mom needs more help than our hormone ladies that are spending $300, $400 in hormones. They get plenty of attention. What we need is the little Medicaid mom or dad who's coming in with the eye drops who's scared, and we don't have time for it. They've ruined why I came into this.
So, Phil, what you're doing in essence is instead of telling people, look to the pharmacist and pharmacists can do this and this, you're their pharmacist online in the sense that you're giving them the reason. You're not telling them the reason. You're giving them the reason of the art of pharmacy that then gives them buy into you. And when they're bought into you, they buy into not just the products they're looking at or the fixes, but they become a believer in a local pharmacist. You're doing that on a bigger scale.
That's the plan. I mean, that's what I want out of it. And it didn't start out that way, but I started out wanting to save my little store, and my little store's okay. And if I wanted to, at this moment, if I wanted to, I would say, hey, I need everybody to start sending their prescriptions to me, and I would kill it. I never said it because I don't want that. I want them to go to your store. I want them to go to the store around the corner. I want them to go to all the little stores, and I want them to talk to their pharmacist. We're huge dorks. We are huge dorks, and sometimes we're a little awkward. But the truth is that if you talk to your pharmacist, every person's life would be better. And as soon as they realize that the idea that you're shipping off to who knows where for to save a little bit of money and have it come through the mail and never talk to anybody, that's failure in my world. My world is that you want to see your pharmacist. You want to talk to your pharmacist. And so if I can show them what a pharmacist does, and then they walk into their pharmacy and they talk to their pharmacist, and next thing you know, instead of talking to me, they're talking to Jill, and Jill now recognizes them when they come in, that's bigger success than it is for me to steal those prescriptions from Jill. Like, I don't need to take her stuff. I don't need to take his stuff. I don't want to do that at all because my goal was just to make my store to where I'm not losing money. My goal was never to get this so big that retirement sounds terrible. Being selfish and having money to buy a yacht, that sounds awful. I just like walking in the desert with a good pair of shoes and a backpack. I don't need that other stuff. So if I can make your store successful, when I have people call me from, because I have pharmacists who call me and they call up and say, hey, thank you for doing this, or how can I help you? That means a ton to me because that pharmacist understands the value of the community. And our community has always been so fractured that it just needs to stop. Like, I don't know how we decided that chains hate retail, hates, like, I never understood why we did that because we all were in school together on the idea of helping people. And then you walk out the door and now all of a sudden you're fighting with each other and it just doesn't, it's never made sense. Doctors don't really do that. We just do it. We're crabs in a pot and we're always ripping each other down. It's going to take us coming together and actually deciding that we all have value as pharmacists. And that's more important than what is in the bank account. Because as soon as we decide we have value in pharmacists, then as pharmacists, we'll say, you can't do that to me because I'm a pharmacist. We are together. You're not doing that to any of us. The way the AMA, look at the way the AMA protects even their worst members. What do we have? We have nothing. Like, they're just like, well, here, give us some money and we'll go get this thing done. And then there's another group that's doing this thing. And we don't reach out and take care of each other at all. You and I, if we would have known each other in 2015, you and I would have got along famously and we could have helped each other. But there's nothing that connects us. And I'm with you. I think that the future of pharmacy has two paths right now. If we choose the right one, because we have value, we'll be fine. And if we allow things to go the way we're going just naturally, which is fighting over percentages on DIR fees that they get to do whatever they want, we'll lose because that's not the battle. The battle has to be, you're going to fix all of this or else we're all going to come after you.
Phil, paint the picture to me of 5 years down the road. And for some beautiful reason, this did come together. But a leader rose up and we were in the right direction. If you could write that story, what would that look like? Who rose up? How did the industries come together? How did finally somebody, instead of talking about unifying, actually unified? And basically, who was that?
So most of your loudest voices in any industry are those that make the most money or have the best chance to make the most money. Most of your regular Joes who work 50 hours a week don't do that. So the person that rises up would have to emulate the person that goes to work every day. Instead of right now, if you're compounding semaglutide, you're making so much money that you're going to have tons of money to throw at the process and you're going to fight over the fact that you get to do it because of the shortage and you're at, and I have no problem with those guys. Good for you. But I think the person that rises up will have to come in and make it so you don't have to play the stupid games to make money.
When you say one person, is it symbolic of a group or is it one person?
Well, I don't think one person can do it alone. I think you have to have somebody who's really good at the PBM side. There are people who spend their whole lives figuring that out. I couldn't do that part. You'd need somebody who's really good at working with the manufacturers and deciding how they're paying you. And the idea that we clean up how we get paid, like the idea that you have an MAC and then you have AWP, but then AWP really isn't mad because you have to have, the idea that we have this system that nobody understands is crazy to me. So I think it would have to be a group, but it would need to be a group that doesn't feel like, well, pay me your membership fees and then we'll get this all done for you. It's going to need to be more of a movement than necessarily a person.
And I guess you already kind of answered that. Like the doctors, you've got Dr. Oz, you've got some other doctor shows, you have a surgeon. It might be something the person has to have some exposure, but it might be a handful of a movement.
And you need to be able to, all of you get together and when you disagree on something, rather than saying, well, you're wrong, you call up and say, he's a pharmacist. He's not always right, but I'm behind him. She's a pharmacist. And although I disagree with this part of him, I am never going to tell you not to do. And once you get that movement of all of everybody moving together, like, oh, I don't, you work mail order. That's fantastic. What could, what, how do we get along? How do we push this down the road? I think that it's a movement in nature. It's just so ingenious how the people who have the most power and money in pharmacy have plotted us against each other consistently. Like you take a PBM, they're like, okay, I'm going to give the chain stores a little bit more money than I'm going to give independent. And then they'll hate each other and they won't hate me.
That's exactly right.
They're so brilliant on how they do it. They're like, okay, so we're gonna pick on this one and then we'll leave this one alone. Or the manufacturers will say, well, we'll give really great prices to the grocery stores and not to the others. So then they'll hate each other. We haven't ever stopped for a second and said, you know what, screw all of you. We're not doing this anymore. But I think that there's a movement. I do think you're going to need a face or a couple of faces who are good with being in front of the limelight. And that's the problem. Most pharmacists, you know this, most pharmacists are fantastic people and horrible to have to watch do anything because they're just so boring or they have to explain like seven. Like you can't just say they're like, which allergy medication? And they'll be out there for like 45 minutes trying to give you the synopsis of the different. People don't want that. You need somebody who will come in and say, are you snotty? Do you have blood pressure issues? Do you take it in the morning or night? Great. Take this one. Like you need somebody who could put it out there in a fun way that you can say he could go on in front of Congress And I would love to watch him talk because he's fun to, or she's fun to watch talk. And then have that person being fed by an army of pharmacists saying, we need to do this. Here's all the stuff you need to do this. Then it would work because you need a face or two, because people will never get behind the idea of a pharmacist, but they will get behind a person. Martin Luther King was so brilliant as a speaker and such a fantastic man, and every way was perfect for what they needed. But there was probably somebody next to or around Martin Luther King who really did all the legwork. He just was willing to do and say what he needed to do, and that was his role. And somebody else did the fact finding and the bus transport, and he was not in their war room saying, okay, we need a, he had a lot of people, and that's going to be what it takes. You're going to need, I'm full on jumping behind somebody else. If somebody wants to do it, I'm there.
But I'm full on jumping behind you.
Well, I don't really want, like, I don't, yeah. I've never really liked the limelight. That's why I hid in the pharmacy for 21 years without doing anything. If I hadn't lost my store, I'd still, you know as well as I do, the worst thing you can do is be known as a pharmacist, because then you have audits and you have state and you have everybody else. Your best thing to do is to ride under the rate, like, it's too late now. I had 1.5 million, it's too late.
Here's the only thing that, if you're in something with some kind of a broadcast, either the podcast or your thing, one of the benefits of that is because people are hearing you, and this might be in my mind, but because people are hearing you, those that want to attack you might hold back a bit because they know what you're going to be talking about the next time that you're on your show or your next spot you're putting out.
I do think that there is that component of, like I said, okay, so most of my followers there, I call them my mama bears because almost all of them are moms with kids. And there is nobody scarier than a mama bear.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
I've actually gone on multiple times with people, because I have people who disagree with me, and they have full right to what they disagree with, and I have a right to what I have. And I've had them attack those people, and I every single time tell them, don't do this. Just leave them alone. Don't do this. Don't do this. But if I were to let them loose, I don't have to say a thing. You'll have 40,000 messages on your way in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so,
that's like Loretta Bosing. I've had her on. She's with the Safe Medicines and so on. She has a challenged disabled child. And boy, she gets people marching forward because it's the same mama bear crowd.
It doesn't take much.
Doesn't take much.
No, and it's because they care. Because at some point you said or did something and they have now attached themselves to you. And it's super awkward when you meet them because they know you. You don't know them. Like, they really know you. And so they'll come up and they're like, they're totally attached to you. And you're like, it's actually really nice, because that's why I believe more in people now than I did 2 years ago. I used to think people were mostly bad, and I don't think that anymore. I did forever. I thought they were bad. And then the more that I got out there, I realized most people are just worried and defensive and anxious and everything else. And so once they feel like they know you, people are so much nicer than they were before. I do think that there needs to be a movement. And I do think that as pharmacists, we need to start looking to someone to push it forward. If there's a legislator that's pushing it forward, it doesn't matter. And that person needs to have the idea, how do I help all pharmacists behind them? And no more having the national chain store one and then the national independent one. And then no more of that at all. The idea is, no one should ever check a prescription and not get at least $5. That's stupid. Where somebody's going to get hurt. You should pay more for your prescription than you do for your coffee. Sorry.
One of the problems I have with these marches and national movements, for whatever the reason, is I don't think some of these groups, if you ask them, define success, I don't think some of them want to define success, because then things stop. The marches stop and all that kind of stuff.
We should have prescribing rights at the same level as NPs and PAs, with the exception that we don't do the original diagnosing. Period. After it's been originally diagnosed that you have blood pressure issues, pharmacists should be prescribing. It would actually fix the whole system, because if you have high cholesterol, the idea that you have to go see someone and you're not going to take it till you do see them, and then when they do it, if you have high cholesterol, you should get your cholesterol medications continually. If you have insulin, there is no reason that a diabetic ever has to go in except for when they need something fixed, something's wrong, they need to get their A1C. To have a barrier to care, that can be fixed by pharmacists that we don't have is ridiculous to me. We can't diagnose. We don't get paid for diagnosis. We don't need to diagnose to prescribe. Those are two different animals. The idea that somebody's been on lisinopril for 5 years and you and I have to decide whether or not we lend them some pills is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. So we should be prescribing after primary diagnosis. There should be no prescription that goes out of any place without at least a $5 dispensing fee on it. And that should be, you cannot cut that out of the cost of goods. You should make $5 per prescription. $5 per prescription, you and I, we could take care of our people forever with $5 per prescription.
And it's got to be called a professional fee or something. We don't want the game right. of putting it into the product because that takes away the value of it.
It needs to be flat out. You do the game you want to with the other one, you get $5 per prescription. And that would then pay for us to do all of the stuff they want us to do already. The idea that you're having to pay a secondary fee, so then I'll go through the MTM and then that's stupid. Pay me $5 per prescription. I'll do it just so I can get it all lined up. Give me some time with my patients. It's not like we want to check prescriptions straight through without looking up off the screen for 15 hours a day. Nobody wanted that. You wanted to go talk to patients. So for me, those are the two goals. If you ask me the two goals, those two, and then clarity on all the money that's going into that, because you're receiving federal funds, anybody who wants to at any time should be able to look at Caremark and say, where did that money go? Express Scripts, where did that money go? Because you're receiving federal funds, that should be complete clarity of where that money is. So I'd want clarity, dispensing fee, prescribing rights.
And those challenges you put forth about the clarity, would that be common in other industries?
In other industries, it's becoming more and more clear of where and who's getting much money and how much, because they would never give a hospital system a blank check the way they did the PBMs. They would say, okay, here's your money. Medicare is never going to say, here's all of your money, here you go. And I know that people are going to say that there's accountable care organizations, and there's, I get that, but that's a different animal because they have to take care of the patient from beginning all the way to end. But I actually think that even in those cases, you can call up United Healthcare and say, we want everything. And they have to be able to produce where the money is. And how can you find fraud, waste, and abuse if you don't have that clear to everybody? The way that people bring in garbage bags of medications and drop them on our counter, this is the issue.
Phil, talking a little bit about monetization, who did you mention does your monetization?
Allie, she just came into my store one day and asked for help for one of her kids. And I hadn't figured out how to monetize at all until December, honestly. I had a couple of brand deals, which justified some of the hours I put into it. And I had one and they needed me to do this thing called whitelisting, which is giving them a code so then they can put it out on their own format. And I couldn't do it. And she just came in asking me a question. I'm like, and I'd never asked anybody before. And I said, do you know how to whitelist? And she said, yeah, here. And she took my phone. And it was like four steps and boom, it was whitelisted. Turns out that before she had her second child, she was working as doing this stuff and as a helper for a group. And she was working towards her graphic arts degree and everything else. And so she started helping me monetize and figuring out the ropes on monetization. And the money that's in social media is so much easier than it is in pharmacy. Like I could quit today and I would be fine. If I'm being honest, I could be way better than fine if I quit today.
As far as your pharmacy, has the social done anything as far as your bottom line in the pharmacy?
We're up 20%.
Because of this, obviously.
Yeah, because it's easy for me. Like when people come in now, it's an easier sell because they're already attached to the brand.
Local people.
Local people. They know I'm here. They know who I am. I reminded people to come back in. It also gave me some latitude in nature because people knew I was struggling. For me to be able to say, I can't charge you the good RX price on this, I'm losing money, people are more accepting of that now that they understand how close it was for me going under.
And that you've shared with them through your posts?
I have. I've told them flat out that there's just the good RX mentality, which I'm not against. I actually really love the idea of being aware of what you should pay when you walk in, because you and I both know this. Like there's times where you're like, you paid how much at that store? That's crazy. But then there's the other side that you're losing money on the other. So I like the education part of that. So I'm not against the GoodRx, but it gives me latitude because I'm now feeling I'm really honest with people saying, I'd love your business, but I can't do it for less than this. And it's easier. People take it easier now because they're attached to the brand, I believe.
In pharmacy, you can get 20% bigger and you can do 20% more and be further in a hole if you're not doing the right mix and so on.
We also got some help on getting into a different buying group that has a little more power that's helped me. My PSAO is substantially better because this gave attention, and other pharmacists reached out and said, okay, what PSAO are you using? And that helped a ton because I didn't understand to run a store and try to just keep the prescriptions going is one thing, and then to do all the business stuff is another, and to have one store and do it is really hard. And so 20% for the store itself, we're probably up 15 to 20% depending on the month. And a lot of it has to do with key people contacting me and me making changes within the business and me being able to be more honest with the people that come in saying, I can't do that for you anymore. You have to pay a little bit more.
In general, a social media influencer, let's say, if I may say that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's where we're at. I don't know if I like it or not, but that is where we're at.
In general, a social media influencer has a few ways. You can do affiliate marketing. You can do in the shoot advertising, like how you see Coke in a movie scene, something like that. So you can do in ad placement verbally, but in ad placement. You can also have someone sponsor you. What's the breakdown right now, Phil, as far as the revenue coming in for the show?
I don't take sponsored deals really very often anymore. I stick with the affiliate, but that has more to do with the type of brand that I've built.
Sure.
So sponsored posts, you get the money no matter what. Yeah, I have an agent. The agent talks to them. They say it's this much per ad. You have to put it on there. No matter what.
And how does that go in the ad?
So most of the time I will present a product. I usually present why you have a product, and I present the product as being an option. And then you have to put that it is an ad at the back, and someplace you have to hashtag it. I've been starting to put it in the corners of a lot of my ads too, just so people know that this is sponsored. A lot of times we'll still announce it, but as affiliate, what happens is I'll say so-and-so product is great, and if you use my code, you get extra money. And then when they click on it, they use your code, then you get a percent sales. Or if you say, I actually found that I can talk about products and just say my link for Amazon's in here, and then Amazon pays you a percentage of everything that goes through. So that's the affiliate. I really like the affiliate because I really feel like if I don't earn it today, I don't want it. I don't want an ad that tanks. That makes me feel bad as an individual. I've owned a business. If I do good, I should get good. If I do bad, then I shouldn't. It's fine. Like, it's the way I see it.
You're not overpromising. You're not going to these companies and say, hey, advertise on my show. And then all of a sudden they advertise and nothing happens. And now there's a different look on you and all that stuff.
Right. And then you have to have this arrogant, you have to be arrogant in your approach to the brands if you do that. And I'm arrogant about certain things, but this is not one of them. You can also own your own store. So there for a while, we were trying to push product from my store so I could ship it nationally. And I just decided that keeping those two things separate would be wise. And it wasn't really the goal. Like the idea, I liked the people who came in, so we didn't do it. So you can also bring your own brand, your own product out to market, and you can launch it. And that's where people make huge amounts of money, is by launching their own product. I would much rather, there's a guy up in Montana that makes his own beard oil, and I keep on trying to figure out how to get him to put that on Amazon so I can help that pharmacist sell his beard oil. And then you could come up with whatever you're doing. The idea of coming all together and then making a co-op where we just shout out at each other all the time is really where I want to be at. But I need to get out of, like, you can't work 90 hours and think you're going to run that too. And then you get paid for creators' fees. So like, because I get enough views, there's a couple $1,000s a month in creator fees. But affiliate money, like, that's where my money comes from. Affiliate money. It's from people clicking links.
When you say your own store, do you mean setting up some kind of a Shopify thing or something, or even more deluxe than that, like a real business?
So there's a gentleman in California who does this thing called drugstore to doorstep. We haven't started it. Like, I'm pushing down the road, but I honestly don't have time. I know everybody, I really just don't have time. But the idea is that you have access through your wholesaler to every product that they sell online. And so what would happen is they could click on yours and it would auto load it in there. And then you could click on it, put it in there. And then either we would deliver it locally, or you can, it's OTC, so you can mail it, like, it's not controlled. So it would create this whole revenue pattern of creating that. But I'm just trying to figure out how I would like to do that for my patients, but I really don't want to steal Mike's patients. I don't want to steal your patients. So I'm trying to figure out how to do that without, I don't know, this is all new. Like, my grand plan was just to get attention so people knew pharmacists were important. And then it became this thing. And now I'm trying to, like, balance it out. And But I do like the affiliate, and I'm telling right now the affiliate deal for pharmacists really should be something that most pharmacies do in one way or the other. The vitamin you sell in your store is better than the one that they picked up on Amazon. So you should be able to sell those and make some money.
There's a guy, he runs a TikTok. I think it's like Alpha Male or something like that. I don't know why I read it. I'm about 100 years older than all these guys they're talking about in there. But he, I think, bought into a company that was making this men's hair or something. He buys in. Now it's his company and he's promoting that brand. Is that what you're talking about your own stuff, sort of?
That would be the way, like you'd start your own and then it would be your brand, because I'd rather have it be, and then you could come up with whatever you're doing. But that's not my plan. My plan's been different for now. And who knows what brings next.
So let's say the store's not there and this becomes your full-time job. You kind of dream about it. You have some ideas in the shower, that kind of thing. The store's no longer on your mind. And let's say you were tasked with getting as much revenue as you could. Let's say that was your focus. What would you be doing if all that were true? What would your next steps be to make this as big as you could?
So there's some pretty large players out there that have contacted me that want me to. Here's an easy one. N-acetylcysteine just came out with a new study that talked about hearing loss in combinations with prednisone in order to help with sudden onset hearing loss. And they show the N-acetylcysteine works on the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor that's found inside, right at the base of the hair cells inside the cochlea. And the combination of the two is substantially better than alone. And so N-acetylcysteine is now getting a lot of attention currently for hearing loss. And then you look at the lipoflavonoid that we all tell everybody to take because we don't know what else for them to take for tinnitus. And there's no N-acetylcysteine in there. So there are some large groups who, because I have this background information, want me to come and make my products with them. If I wanted to make money, I could go that way. And I think I could be, like, I don't have to do, like, it's weird because 2 years ago, I'm ready to be, like, folded up, unemployed. And now I'm looking at it and the world's right in front of me and I have to keep reminding myself, even if I did that, would I be happy in 5 years? And that's what I would do, and it would make a ton of money. And right now, with the momentum I have, I don't think it would be a problem. Like, honestly, I think I could capitalize to no end. But when I sit on the back of my porch and the storm comes in and the rain's coming, I tell myself, will you be less busy? Will you be happy? I would be happy if I could travel, though. You know what I want to do? I want to go to pharmacists. I want to go find every pharmacist that's struggling, and I want to have a Travel Channel type show where I go to your store. I see you. You tell me your secret. We do something together, right? Then you take me to your local swimming hole and I jump off your rope swing. We go eat a burger at the place where you always buy lunch for your people. And then we put it out there and then each store has this spotlight. That's what I want, the time to go visit every place and go visit pharmacies, because the more pharmacists like you that I get in front of a camera that 50,000 people in your area see, then you get to be that for the next person. I would love that. I just don't know if I'm brave enough to do it, meaning that I'd have to walk out the door and be done with the store.
It's a little bit like the Guy Fieri.
That's the idea. The diners dies.
Diners drive-in, and he maybe doesn't go to their local park, but you could add that into it too on the rope swing and stuff like that.
That's what I would like to do, because I could do that. And I think that if people can get a personal connection with somebody in their town, that becomes the goal to make pharmacists important. That's what I want. I would love to do that. I just have to be brave enough to quit coming to my own store to do that. That's the problem. I think it would be successful because you do it on a YouTube channel. I don't think it'd be, but I just don't know if I'm brave enough to say, do you really trust social media? Because I'm a child in the 90s. I've been told not to trust anything. And I believe that.
We all know how Facebook can go away and Twitter could be gone tomorrow and Snapchat and Insta and TikTok. There's going to be something else coming out in a year where anybody who uses TikTok is going to be an old fart, and right, all the freshmen in high school, they're with this new thing. So with your brand, it's not really social media specific. You've already proved that with your Insta load and some others and TikTok. And so, boy, I'm saying if it wasn't for the friends and the longevity of the business and all that, I'm saying this has to happen in a year.
I think you're probably right. Like, I have to make a decision and it keeps growing and I can I could sit on my haunches and I could make money off the affiliate deals and the store's doing fine and I would be fine. But what does that, when you're 80, what does that mean to you? You know what I mean? I would like to feel like when I'm done that I made a difference for all the other pharmacists, because I think pharmacists can do more good, and I mean this, more good than any other profession. We have more of an opportunity to have that girl who's coming in who's like 22 or 25 and she can't get pregnant and she's sad. We're the ones that have that chance to see all of them. We're the ones that get to see the old man that loses his wife, not just when she loses his wife, but for years afterwards, and be kind to him. And if I can make pharmacy be seen as what we should be, and then I'm 80, that's better than money. So that's what I would like. I think that building a legacy for me would be to make the world 1% kinder. And then if I look at it that way, the idea of taking that big deal from whoever doesn't make any sense. It's just more tact. They just take it from you. You and I both know that. Every time you make more money, they just take it from you anyway. But friends don't go anywhere and they're there. So that is my dream. If you can make that happen, I would travel to every little pharmacy I could if I could be in a position. And then I show up, we make you attach yourself to the person, and then we leave and we go to the next place, and now they get an extra 200 patients. If not, is it somebody else? I will be in their camp in a second if somebody else wants to do it, because I don't think it'll be easy. I think it'll actually make you really tired and make you really sad a lot of days, because I hear your story and I hear my story. I look at you and I see somebody walking around in the background, and I know what you gave up for that person that was walking around the background of your... I know that that's a person that you not only are giving up time now, but you gave up time before, and you came home broken a lot of days. And you did it for that person that's walking around in the background. And you should go, whoever that is, you should go give them a hug, because you did it for them. And there's thousands of pharmacists that are sad and broken, and we don't need to be, because I think we're stronger than the doctors if we got together. What good's a doctor without a prescription?
Phil, typically I will close a show with some thought, but your words are so powerful. And as you say, people know you without you knowing them. So I'm going to tell my listeners, just go on TikTok, Instagram, Phil's My Pharmacist, and get to know Phil. So thank you, Phil. Thank you for your time, and really appreciate you sharing yourself with the show today.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. That the audience we're talking to is the audience that I really hoped best for. So you're huge in the idea of people feeling better about being pharmacists. So I appreciate what you do.
Well, it's a labor of love, as you know. Certain parts of it.
Yeah, well, and then you put all the hours and you're like, I just want to go to bed. So, yeah. You know.
All right, Phil, we'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.